Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunatu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vadhetamastu, Ma Vidvisavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May He protect us, may He sustain us. May we grow in strength together. May our study together be fruitful. And may we not hate one another. Oh, peace, peace, peace. So good morning. Welcome to our retreat. I'm very happy today to introduce one of the newest Swamis in America. He's only been here about 8 months. He's the assistant to Swami Prabhupada in San Francisco. And this is his very first time here, and very first time in Holy Land. And I met him when I went to Providence for the inauguration of the temple there. And a very nice Swami, and also a very scholarly Swami. For 6 years, he was an Acharya at the training center in Bellarmine. He also then spent many years as editor in both Mayavati, or both in Advaita Ashram in Calcutta and Chennai. So he's very well versed in scriptures and so forth. And he's going to be giving the retreat on Navavidha Bhakti. And this retreat was originally scheduled for Swami Sridharananda, as you know. But he started construction on a new temple, and so he had to cancel his visit this year. And so we invited Swami Tattvamayananda to come. And now I invite him to come up and begin to speak.
प्रवेश्य मम वाच मीमां प्रसुप्तां संजीवयति अखिलशक्तिधरस्वधाम्ना अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणश्रवणत्वगादीन् प्राणान् नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यम्. I bow down to Supreme Reality, who is the indweller and energizer of the entire creation. Om peace, peace, peace. Thank you, Swamiji Vardhanandaji, for introducing me, for all the kind words that you spoke while introducing me. The subject before me is ninefold path of devotion. In Sanskrit, it is called Navavidha Bhakti. Technically, this Navavidha Bhakti was expounded on two different occasions. One version is found in the Bhagavata Purana, and another version is found in the Adhyatma Ramayana. So, according to Bhagavata tradition, it was expounded by Prahlada, who is supposed to be one of the greatest devotees in the Bhagavata tradition. And according to Adhyatma Ramayana, it was expounded by Lord Sri Rama to a great devotee, a great woman devotee of the Lord with the name Shabari. I shall just give a brief background and outline of what we normally mean by this term bhakti. The term bhakti is related to a Sanskrit root, according to Panini's grammar, bhaj sevane. Bhaj means to serve, to worship, to honor, to meditate upon, and so on. Now, this bhakti ideal has been expounded by different great sages and saints of ancient India. Some of the greatest devotees of the bhakti tradition, like Narada, Prahlada, and Shandilya, and several other saints and sages, have tried to give a definition of bhakti. But we have to remember, bhakti or devotion is something that we can't actually define, we can't explain in words. It is beyond definition, beyond words, beyond expression. Because bhakti is an infinite experience. And you know, experience is something which we can never explain. It is something that we can only experience. There is an ancient suktam, a rig in Rigveda Samhita, Antaya Bahuvadinam Anantaya Mukam. The translation is something like this. The language of the infinite experience is silence, which means it's beyond words. The language of anything which is finite, which is limited, is verbosity. You can write volumes, you can speak, you can explain what is finite. But what is beyond words, what is beyond description, something we can, which we can only experience, can never be explained. But still I shall just quote a few definitions of bhakti. According to a very great bhakti teacher, his name is the sage Narada, he says, Sattu asmin parama prema rupa. This is the Sanskrit sukta. Narada says, bhakti is that which is of the nature of supreme love for the ultimate reality, for God. In fact, those of you who are familiar with the writings of Spinoza, Maker Eckhart, Meister Eckhart, and St. Francis of Assisi, all these, some of the great writings like Philokalia, those of you have read Brother Lawrence's works, writings, etc., you find sometimes they get lost when they reach a level of communion with the God. Within Christian theological tradition, mystical tradition is sometimes termed as Christian experience. Now, according to the great teachers of bhakti tradition in India, bhakti or devotion to God is of the nature of supreme love for the ultimate reality, in which you merge yourself in the infinite. You lose your own individuality. Another great philosopher, devotional philosopher, his name was Shandilya, the great Shandilya. He says, Sa Paranuraktihi Ishwari. His definition also comes very close to Narada's definition. Bhakti or devotion is nothing but absolute, complete love for God. Now we are dealing with the Navadha Bhakti. Those of you who have read the Bhagavad Gita may have read, may be familiar with the Bhakti Yoga, that's 12th chapter. 12th chapter deal with the path of devotion. In the 12th chapter, from 8th to 11th verse, in 4 verses, Lord Krishna gives 4 levels of evolution of love of God or devotion to God. 4 levels of evolution. In the 8th verse, Krishna says, mayi eva mana adatsva mayi buddhim niveshya nivasishyasi mayi eva ata urdhvam na samsaya. This verse is a translate in English, because unless we refer to the original verse, we won't be able to connect the ideas that we are discussing with the original sources. So Lord Krishna says, when a devotee dedicates his mind and intellect, his thoughts, his speculations, his entire psychophysical mechanism to God, when he surrenders his mind and intellect to God, God will start living in him. Tum mayi nivasishyasi. That is the kind of pledge, a promise which God is making to Arjuna. When and if you devote, you surrender your mind and intellect, by which means thoughts and also all types of intellectual speculations to God, then I live in you, and simultaneously you live in me. So God starts living in devotee's mind. In fact, God takes a permanent residence in the devotee's heart. And then the devotee also will live in God. This is the state of the highest devotion which Narada and Chandilya outlines. In fact, this is the state of the highest devotional experience, what we call the highest mystical devotional experience in all spiritual traditions, all devotional traditions. This is the 8th verse. Now in the 9th verse, in the next verse, the teacher of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, gives an alternative. It is not possible for a beginner, for somebody who has just started his spiritual journey, to live in God, to dedicate his mind and intellect to God, because every minute, every second, our mind is being dragged by all the 5 senses towards external objects. Every minute. There is a famous work by Shankaracharya. It is one of the foundational textbooks. Maybe some of you must be familiar. Most of you perhaps. Viveka Chudamani. There is an interesting verse in this. In this book, Shankaracharya says, panchabdadhi panchabhireva pancha panchattamapusa gunena baddhaha guranga madanga padanga meenaha bringa nara panchabhiranchidakim. When I translate in English, it is something very interesting. Shankaracharya says that in the case of man, every minute all the 5 senses of perception are dragging mind towards external objects. But before that, he says, he is giving the example of kuranga, madanga, padanga, meenam. I mean, 4 creatures. 4 creatures. One is kuranga, means deer. In ancient times, these, the hunters, they used to trap deers by playing music on some musical instruments, flutes most probably. So the deers will be hiding in a cave or in a bush. The hunter will start playing on these flutes. So hearing this music, the deer will rush out of the bush or cave. And when it comes out, the hunter will shoot the arrow and kill the deer. So one sense of perception, namely the ears, very called sravanendriyam it is called, it becomes the cause of destruction, death of the deer. It listens to this music, it comes out and is killed. Then the next animal which Shankara refers to is elephants. Elephants move in herds in the forest. And you know how they are trapped, they are caught. The male elephants will move touching the female elephants. And then they fall in a trap. The elephant hunters will dig huge pits, and then on the top they will cover it with a thin layer of dry leaves, and the elephants won't know there's such a deep pit there. and touching these female elephants, and they mutually, they touch each other, they fall in this trap. So another case, the sense of touch becomes the cause of death and destruction or enslavement for life of elephants. Then Patanga means moth. During the rainy season, sometimes, you know, small creatures will emerge from the earth in thousands, and seeing a blazing fire, these moths will rush towards the blazing fire, attracted by that effulgence of the fire. So their netrendriya means their eyes become the cause of death, destruction of the moths. And then the fourth one is, you know, fish. What happens to fish? The fish is caught because it eats the bait, so it is trapped. And then some kinds of creatures which move from flower plant to flower plant, attracted by the perfumed, the smell of flowers, they are caught. And when they move from flower plant to flower plant, they are caught and they may be killed. So Shankaracharya says, in the case of each of these five creatures, one sense of perception becomes the cause of their death. But what about man? Nara panjabhiranchita kim. What to speak of the fate of man? Man means woman also, human beings, that's what is meant. In the case of human beings, what happens? Every second, every minute, human mind is being dragged by the five senses towards external objects, and in pursuit of external objects, man becomes tired, or human beings become tired, and they become exhausted. Now, this is what happens. So how can you imagine anyone to be able to surrender mind and intellect to God? So Lord Krishna gives an alternative in the ninth verse. He says, Atha chittam samadhadum na shaknoshi mai sthiram abhyasa yogena tadu mam ichchaptum dhananjaya. Lord Krishna says, it is certainly not possible for any human being to completely dedicate, surrender mind and intellect to God at the beginning of one's spiritual life, spiritual journey. So slowly he or she should start practicing. He should try to give a Godward orientation to all the senses. So you must try to hear about God. You must try to chant hymns in praise of God. Whatever you do as a worship of God. In this way, one can sublimate, one can elevate all his activities, all the activities of the senses towards kind of spiritual practice. This is outlined in the Bhagavata Purana by Prahlada. Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnoho Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam. These are the nine paths, ninefold doctrine of bhakti. It's called Navadham Bhakti according to Bhagavata Purana. Sravana, hear, try to hear about God, about spiritual values. If one can't completely dedicate to God, at least read some good books, good literature, poetry, mysticism, anything. So that will help a person to keep his intellect on a higher level, at a higher level. This Abhyasa Yoga is prescribed for those who cannot completely surrender mind and intellect to God. Because slowly, by diverting all the five senses, one is able to think of God all the time. Sravana means hearing. Kirtana means singing the glories of the Lord, singing hymns in praise of God. Smaranam means thinking about God. Here, all the time, giving the mind to spiritual thoughts, elevating, sublimating thought currents. So, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Virgunam, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam. Pada here should be understood as entire humanity. Pada means Padosi Vishwa Bhudani. Pada is defined in the Purusha Sukta, in the Rigveda Samhita, as symbolic of the entire human family, the entire empirical world. The entire empirical or phenomenal world is equated as 1/4 of the totality of creation. So, now, worshipping God, serving God, and also serving human beings as the as expressions of the divinity, inner divinity. Because God should be understood not as one who creates this world and stands apart, but God is one who is immanent, who is present, is an indwelling principle in all living beings, not only human beings, but entire creation. God is the immanent principle. There is nothing in this world in which God is not present as immanent reality. And God is omnipresent. It is an all-pervading reality. There is nothing in this world where God's presence is not felt. And it is God is also the transcendental reality, the ultimate reality. So God as understood as the immanent and the omnipresent reality and also the transcendental principle should be worshipped in human beings. So every act of service of your neighbor becomes an act of worship. The Swami Vivekananda says in his Practical Vedanta, the infinite oneness of the soul is the eternal sanction of all morality, all ethics and all good actions. The highest criterion for morality is the belief that creation is one, the entire humanity is one spiritual family. So every act of service becomes an act of worship. At the highest level, only worship exists. So, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam. Archanam means Poojanam, means formal worship. Those who believe in images can do that, or they can also serve the entire humanity as an expression of the all-pervading, immanent, divine principle. Vandanam means paying obeisance. You bow down. You mean humility. Humility. Dasya means trying to consider oneself as a servant of God. This is often practiced by, this was practiced by many saints in India and also in some of the European mystical tradition you find. So Archanam, Vandanam, Dasi. Sakya means comradeship. You think of yourself as God's friend, comrade, and look upon God as your friend. So Atmanivedana means total surrender of your small personality to God. Thereby you look upon God as the one to whom you are surrendered completely. You yourself completely. Atmanivedanam is sometimes equated with what the Vaishnavites call Sharanagati or Prapatti, total surrender to God. According to Vaishnavite tradition, according to the teachings of Ramanuja and others, this Atmanivedanam has got six components, six factors. One should first of all try to feel his mind or her mind with positive thoughts, trying to feed your mind with positive ideas so that when you try to meditate, when you try to worship, when you try to contemplate on God, there will be no conflicts There is no there will be no conflicting thoughts emerging from the mind. So anugulyasya sankalpaha pradigulyasya varjanam. This is the Vaishnava tradition, devotional tradition. You, on the one hand, you should try to fill your mind with positive thoughts, thoughts which are conducive to a spiritual life, devotional life. And then simultaneously, one should try to avoid negative thoughts. You often find there is always a conflict between mind and intellect. When you read a good book, when you listen to a good talk, immediately you are convinced, this is something really wonderful, which is something which I should follow. When you read any good book, you find intellect suddenly grasps this idea. And you admire it, you try to practice it. But mind doesn't agree. Flesh is strong, but spirit is weak. That way also can happen. The inverse way. Mind becomes weak. Mind is not willing to cooperate with ideas grasped or desired by the intellect. So these great devotees, the teachers of devotional philosophy, they give this recommendation. On the one hand, you should try to fill your mind with positive thoughts, ideas which are useful, helpful in spiritual life. When we watch a picture, when we hear a sound, and when we touch an object, or when we smell something with our nostrils, or when you taste something with our tongue, any of these five senses, mind you, all these will bring something to our mind. If you don't take care to to emphasize feeding your mind with positive thoughts, mind will certainly attract negative thought patterns. So on the one hand, one should try to feed the mind with positive thoughts. On the other hand, one should take care to avoid negative thought currents. So the first factor in Atmanivedanam is anuvulyasya sankalpa, means concentrating on positive thoughts, ideas and thought currents which are helpful in leading a spiritual life. And along with that, we must also try to avoid negative thought currents. And then rakshasididhi vishwasaha goptrupta varanam tatha. These are the third and fourth components. Rakshasididhi vishwasa means a strong belief that God will protect me. And goptrupta varanam tatha, looking upon God as one's sole protector. These are all very important practices for spiritual aspirants, especially those who follow the path of devotion. And again, Atmanikshepa Karpani Shadvidha Sharanagati. One should try to spiritualize our whole life, then spiritualization of the totality of human existence. There should not be any compartment. So I shall practice devotion in the morning and evening. So sometimes, you know, very often it happens, highly regimented mechanical devotional practices sometimes become stumbling blocks in our spiritual progress. What really happens? Morning 2 hours or maybe 1 hour, evening 1 hour, we sometimes devote to spiritual practices. Then we delude ourselves into thinking that we are doing something wonderful, we are progressing in spiritual life. So all the great spiritual teachers emphasize, they stress the fact, there should be a connecting link between our formal devotional practices and the totality of our life. So even when we are engaged in work, in professional duties and responsibilities, whether teaching, studying, whatever may be, somehow we have to keep our mind at a high level by trying to connect our mind in a subtle way with spiritual thought currents. Otherwise, conflicts will come. So slowly, the great teachers of devotional philosophy stress the fact that one should try to spiritualize the totality of human existence. So from mechanical devotional practices to real spiritual practice, one should evolve, one should graduate. These are the ideas which are stated again and again. So I shall try to give an idea of the third and fourth factors which are expounded by Sri Krishna in the 12th chapter. As I said, you know, from 8th verse to 11th verse, in 4 verses, Lord Krishna gives 4 levels of devotional evolution, evolution of devotional life, in a descending order. He says, at the highest level, one should be able to surrender mind and intellect completely to God. This is the highest level. But then he says, well, this is not possible for the beginner. So one should try to elevate, one should try to sublimate the totality of human life, existence, to a spiritual level by practicing Abhyasa Yoga. This Abhyasa Yoga is called Navadha Bhakti, ninefold path of devotion in the Bhagavata Purana. So in the 8th verse, he speaks of a devotee of the highest type. In the 9th verse, he gives an option, an alternative for those who have not reached that level. In the 10th verse, he gives another alternative who are still still far behind. He says, Abhyasepi asamarthosi madkarma paramo bhava madartham abhikarmani kurvan siddhim avapsisi. Well, if we cannot practice Abhyasa Yoga, then you do your duty. But remember, it's not your duty, it is my work. That anyone can do. If you practice this slowly, you will reach a level where you are able to practice Abhyasa Yoga. But Lord Krishna doesn't stop there. In the 11th verse, he comes down right to the level of the of a spiritual aspirant of the lowest type. He says, Atha edadabhi ashaktosi kartu madhyoga masridaha sarva karma phalatyagam tatah kuru yatatmavan. In the 11th verse, Lord Krishna says, well, if you cannot practice Abhyasa Yoga, and if you cannot even practice action, duties for my sake, well, do your duty, but mentally you surrender the results of your action to God. So sarva karma phalatyagam tatah kuru yatatmavan. So these are the 4 paths which Lord Krishna recommends for spiritual aspirants, especially those who choose the path of devotion. Now, as I said, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. These are the nine paths. These are the 9 components in Avadha Bhakti. One is Sravanam, which means hearing, trying to hear about God, His life, His love, His glories. Hearing need not necessarily be vocal hearing. Even when you read a sacred book, whether it is Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or the Saint Avesta or any or Dhammapada, whatever may be. Because when you read a sacred book with devotion, you are actually only reading, but you find later when you remember, you feel the words are ringing in your ears. That's what happens. So devoted reading, careful reading has the same effect of Sravanam. Kirtanam, singing glories of God. These are the practices. Praising, singing hymns or songs in praise of God. Smaranam, remembering. Remembering also can be done through readings. Devoted, careful reading will have the same effect as remembering. Padasevana means service. Sometimes you come across many great spiritual persons, may not necessarily be religious. There are many great spiritual persons who do good things to others with all humility. They may not go to temples, churches or any places of worship, but they will do service to many people. There are many such great men. Their spiritual may not necessarily be religious in a conventional sense. Such great men you find. So Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, those who are worshipping God, those who are worshipping, this is also one path. One can combine all these paths, one can combine whatever of these paths are suitable to you, according to you, or one can pass any one of these nine paths. Vandana means paying obeisance to God. Dasyam, that you find in the lives of many mystics, they look upon themselves as servants of God, an attitude of servitude. They consider themselves as servants of God. Sakhyam, Arjuna is a classic example. Sakhedi Matva Prasavam Yaduktam Ye Krishna He Yadava He Sakhedi, you find in Gita. Arjuna thought of Krishna as his friend, as a comrade. Atma Nivedana means complete surrender. Of this, I shall give a few examples from the Puranic and from the classical tradition, because examples play a very important role in driving home the essence of any of these paths. One classic example for Sravanam you find in the devotional classic of Bhagavata Purana. You know how Bhagavata Purana came to be written. It is something very interesting. It is in the form of a dialogue between a king who had only 7 days to live, 7 into 24 hours to live, and a great saint called Shuka. The story is something like this. I shall give a brief outline. The great king Parikshit, he was the grandson of Arjuna, in fact. He was a great king, very noble, very righteous. But somehow, it often happens, you know, there was a misfortune in his life. He did something absolutely wrong. One day he went out hunting in the forests. In those days, it was the duty of emperors and kings to go about hunting, killing wild animals, so that forests will be safe for sages and saints to do spiritual practice. Now, it so happened that one day he was so exhausted and tired, and he entered the hermitage of a sage. Name was Shamika. The sage was completely immersed in meditation. He didn't know the king had entered the hermitage. He wanted to drink water because he was exhausted. And it seems he asked for water. But the sage was so completely immersed in meditation that he didn't hear anything, and he didn't know that a guest had entered his hermitage. So the king thought, see how even a great king who was otherwise had a reputation as a very noble, as a just administrator, he thought, this old man is meditating, pretending I am come here asking for a glass of drinking water, and he doesn't respond. He seems to be so proud. So there was a dead snake lying about. The king took the snake with the end of his bow and put it under the neck of the sage, and he went his way. Now, I would say a little away from the hermitage, this sage's son, his name was Shrinki, he was playing with his friend, small boy. But he was also a great ascetic. He was playing with these boys. So boys made fun of him, you are playing like this, but you know what has happened to your old father? There is a wonderful ornament around his neck. Go and see. So this boy didn't know. He went back to his hermitage. There he found his old father sitting there with a dead snake around his neck. Now this boy was not an ordinary boy. He had been practicing spiritual sadhana, meditation, all this. So he had acquired tremendous spiritual power. But of course he was still a very young boy. So he had not become mature. So he said, well, I shall teach this man, whoever may be, who had put this dead snake around my father's neck. He entered river, took tarpanam, you know, this kind of spiritual rituals, and he invoked a curse. He said, anyone, whoever he may be, who had done this heinous crime, shall die within 7 days. He shall be bitten by a poisonous snake. That was the curse this boy put on the king. Of course, he didn't know who actually done this mischief. Now, after some time, this sage opened his eyes and he came to know, by his spiritual power, he came to know what had really transpired, what had happened. And when he came to know, he scolded the young boy. What a terrible thing you have done. Parikshit was a great king. Of course, by mistake, he did something. He did this heinous crime he did. But otherwise, he was a great king. Now, because of you, the king will die. And we know when the king dies, the whole nation will fall into anarchy. Indirectly, you have become the cause of anarchy and lawlessness in this kingdom. And he sent somebody to King Parikshit and told him, look here, my son, this young boy, had cursed you. And he had cursed, so now there is no way out for you. You have only 7 days to live. Now, look upon Parikshit. When Parikshit thought over what had happened, he became filled with remorse, repentance. He cursed himself that he did such a terrible thing, a great sage meditating. And because he became impatient, he mistook the sage's silence to be impertinence. So he became filled with remorse, repentance, sorrow and grief. He didn't find fault with either the small boy or anyone. He said, I have only 7 days to live. Now I shall hand over my responsibility, this kingdom, the crown, everything to my son. His son's name was Janamejaya. So Parikshit declared Janamejaya the next king, handed over all the responsibilities to King Janamejaya and left his palace, his kingdom, everything, and came to the banks of Ganga, river Ganga, Ganges. Now, when the great sages and saints of those days came to know of what was happening, they also came to the banks of the Ganga. They found this king, the mighty emperor Parikshit, had dressed himself as an ascetic. He had given up his throne, his crown, everything. He had dressed himself as an ascetic and he decided to meditate and spent his remaining 7 days in meditation and spiritual practices. Now, among the great saints who had assembled there was the greatest saint of those days. He was the great sage Sukha. Sukha was the son of Vyasa, the author of Bhagavata Purana and the author of Mahabharata and other great books. Now, when King Parikshit had this misfortune, came to know that a great saint Sukha himself had arrived, he approaches Sukha. What should a dying man do? Death is a creative crisis. It is not end of the journey for the wise man, because according to Vedantic tradition, this life is not the end of everything. Death is not the end of human existence. Death is only a semicolon or a comma. It is not a full stop. In the Gita you find Dehinasmin yatha deke kaumaram yavvanam jara tatha dehantara praptihi dhirastatrana mukhyati. The sign of a wise man is that he knows that birth, boyhood, youth, middle age, old age, death, all these are taking place at the body level, not at the Atman level. These are changes which take place, which takes place at the body level. Man is born, a human being is born, he lives, he works, he dies and reborn according to his actions, his merits or demerits. But there is something which continues to exist even after this body has gone away. Remember, this was the great boon Nachiketa asked Yama in the Kathopanishad. I won't go into those details. Ayam prete vijigitsa manushi asti teye na ayam asti vichayage edad vidya manushishta stoyakam varana mesha varastratiha. You know, Nachiketa was granted three boons. The first two boons Yama, his teacher, immediately granted. The third boon and the greatest boon was this. Some people say that death is the end of the death of human existence. After death nothing remains. And according to some other people, after death something continues to exist. Death happens only for the body, not for soul, Atman. Please teach me the supreme truth. So this inquiry into the mystery of death, this mystery of death is also the mystery of life, because death is something related to this human body. And for a spiritual aspirant, the whole process of human life is a careful preparation for leaving this world with a smile on your face, not crying and weeping. You find Sri Ramakrishna's life and all the great spiritual personalities, they could leave this world with a smile. So Parikshit wanted to die intelligently. He wanted to die as a wise man. So he puts a question to Yashuka. Ata prichami samsiddhim yoginam paramam gurum purusha seha yatkaryam mriyamanasya sarvatha. This is the question. Now please, oh great sage, I want to ask you one question. Mriyamanasya yatkaryam, this is the Sanskrit, means what is to be done by a dying man? When death is staring at you in the face, you have got only little time to, what will you do? You won't go for wealth, reputation, because you know very well that this body, everything comes to an end. So you want to invest something which continues to exist after death, that you can reap the, you can draw your check even after this life. So yes, martavyam atho jabhyam yad kartavyam nirbhi prabhu smartavyam bhajaniyam va bruhi yadva viparyayam. Parikshi continues asking this question to the great sage Shuka. I'm talking about Sravana. Parikshi is the greatest example of a great king who could die intelligently through Sravana, by hearing the glory of God. So he asked the question, I want to ask you the question, what should dying man do? Whom he should meditate upon? What actions he should perform? Whom he should worship? What is that which a dying man should try to do? This comes in the first skandha of Bhagavata Purana, maybe the 19th chapter. 37 verse around that. In the second book, the second skandha, the saint, this great saint Shuka answers. Parikshit asks two questions. What should a dying man do and what he should not do? First, you know, Shuka answers the later part of the question. What a dying man should not do. What a man whom death is staring at his face should not do. They see common people ignorant of anything beyond this body, beyond these worldly pleasures. They live their life, their senses given to pleasures. But an intelligent person, a spiritual seeker, should be able to leave this world with the remembrance of God in his heart. Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Sudharma Parinishthaya Janma Labha Para Pumsam Ante Narayana Smriti. This is the recommendation. The medicine which Sukha prescribes to the King Parikshit, who is facing the great crisis, the greatest crisis, and for those who are worldly minded, the most disastrous, the most grievous, painful crisis of human life, death. So he says, Ante Narayana Smriti. Narayana Smriti means remembrance of God. That is the highest supreme goal of human existence. That is what every spiritual person, every spiritual seeker, no matter which religion you belong to, even if you don't have any religion, even if you don't believe in God, still you should think, you should be able to leave this world with a higher thought, which is a transcendental idea in your mind. And this, for this there are many paths. Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Sudharma Parinishthaya. Through Jnana Yoga, through Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, take any of these paths and make use of any of these paths and try to leave this world with remembrance of God in your mind. This is the recommendation given by Sukha. Now, the whole Bhagavata Purana is in fact an answer to a king who put the question, how should man should die? And then Parikshit listened to Sukha's narration of the life and teachings of Lord Krishna, and on the seventh day he dies with a smile on his face, with the remembrance of God in his heart. So Parikshit is supposed to be the greatest example for Sravana, the first of the ninefold path of devotion, Vinavatha Bhakti. Now, there is a famous verse attributed to Sukha, where Sukha says, in fact, he may have in mind people who think, well, I'm doing my duty, why should I think about higher spiritual ideas? So Sukha says, Dharma Sunishthita Pumsam Vishukshena Kathasuyaha Nurpadiye Yadi Yatim Srama Evaki Kevala. Now, here Sukha says, sorry, this is Sutta. Sutta is the narrator who appears in the Bhagavata Purana. The main story is of Sukha, but within that there is some sub-narratives. There it says, so Dharma Sunishthita Pumsam. There are many people who tell you, well, I am doing my duty and I need not worry about anything else. God will be pleased with me. But remember, see, duty consciousness is a neutral, you know. Dharma or duty consciousness is something neutral. We may work hard, we may achieve everything, we may achieve money, wealth, status, reputation, everything. But very often we find in this modern age, with all the work efficiency and workaholism, organization skill, management skill that you have put at the service of worldly success, after some time you become psychologically incapable of enjoying whatever wealth you have acquired. More stress, more tension, melancholia, anxiety, neurosis, depression, and so on. Why does the modern man find himself incapable of enjoying the fruits of his labor in modern times? There are many people who are successful in worldly achievements, who are efficient and who, there are many who have written success stories about their achievements. But sometimes you find they are also suffering from anxiety, neurosis, depression and so on. When they work hard for achieving worldly comforts and worldly pleasures, they are anxious about the result of their work. Well, perhaps my work won't produce the expected result. So anxiety, neurosis at the time of doing work. And then if the work doesn't produce the expected result, then depression also comes. So most of the psychosomatic problems, psychological problems, psychiatric problems, which are sometimes called the problems of abundance, are due to a person's inability to place a higher value in spiritual life. So, a higher ideal in spiritual life. So Bhagavata and other devotional classics do not ask you to run away from this world. They only teach that when we pursue the path of artha and kama, worldly comforts and pleasures, we should not deviate from the path of a higher spiritual principle. Otherwise, this work is only work, nothing more. So, the great teacher Sutta says, Srama eva hi kevalam. If duty consciousness, work, efficiency and all these do not produce this higher value, then it is just physical effort, nothing more, nothing less. That is the problem of duty consciousness devoid of a definite spiritual goal beyond the empirical, beyond the worldly pleasures and achievements. So Sravana is something very important. As I said earlier, Sravana is the first means, because we hear many things. Sravana, as I said, should be extended to other activities. Any attempt, any work which brings in ideas into our mind. Reading a book, listening to a conversation, all these should be put together as Sravana. So, in another context, a teacher, Shaunaka, he condemns people who are steeped in worldly pressures, who won't think of any higher spiritual goal in their life. She says, Ayur Harati Vai Pumsan Udyannastam Chayan Naso Tarpyate Yat Kshano Niti Uttama Sloka Vartaya Tarava Kimna Jeevanti Bhasra Kimna Sams Shusatyuda Na Khadati Na Mohanti King Grama Pashavopare. It's a very interesting story. These trees also live, mountains live, valleys and oceans also live, rivers also live. Entire phenomenal, the mystery of the external phenomena, they live in this world. What is the basic difference between a living, thinking human being and this natural phenomena? A human being alone can stand apart, away from this natural process of evolution. Because life is like a stream, you know. One distinction of a human being is he can stand away and think for a moment, well, what is the mystery of this existence? What is the mystery of this life? This is possible only for human beings. And once you start asking this question, as the great sage Suga said, you can accept any of the three parts. If you are of an emotional temperament, you can spiritualize all your emotions. You can spiritualize all the functions of mind and intellect. Because the one greatness, one unique factor of the path of devotion is, it doesn't ask you to give up anything. Normal human emotions that every human being has got are given a spiritual orientation, a Godward orientation. We love many things in this world, but if you think carefully, there is only one love which is eternal. That is the relationship between God and a human being. Everything else is non-eternal. Nothing is everlasting. It doesn't mean that other human relations should be discouraged. Not at all. One should live in this world, should do all the duties and responsibilities, but keep in mind all that belongs to this world are non-eternal. They are necessary, they are real from a common sense point of view, and we should do our duties and responsibilities towards all beings, human beings, all relations. But at the same time, if we can do all that with one idea in mind, God is only reality, then you can live in this world without anxiety and without worry. That's the main difference. Even if you worry, it doesn't solve the problem. But once we keep in our mind that God is the only reality, God is the only real friend, the only real relative, the only real reality which is worth adoration, and then at the same time do all the duties and responsibilities properly, then the shocks and griefs and disasters and disappointments won't shock us, will not be a shock for us. That's the main difference. So you find in Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life many such examples. See, in fact, Sri Ramakrishna's gospel, that spiritual classic, was written by a man who went to commit suicide, Mahendranath Gupta. He was a well-educated man, very noble, very cultured, intellectual. But due to domestic problems, one day he almost decided to put an end to his life and left his home almost at midnight, 10:30, 11 o'clock night, with his wife. But somehow he happened to land in a friend's house, but there he couldn't stay. Then he went to his nephew's house at midnight, and next day evening, wandering in different places on the banks of river Ganga, he happens to come to Dakshineswar. There he finds Sri Ramakrishna sitting in his room, surrounded by a few devotees and admirers, and Sri Ramakrishna was talking to his devotees all around him. And so when he heard Sri Ramakrishna's voice and his word, he didn't stay there for a long time during the first visit, but he felt there is something wonderful in this man's words. And he left that place, but again he felt that something, some strange power was drawing him towards the temple, Dakshineswar temple, where Sri Ramakrishna was living. And gradually he started coming again and again. He became a frequent visitor, and he was the one who wrote down the instructions of Sri Ramakrishna, which he gave to his disciples in his diary, which are available today in the form of a spiritual classic, the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. So Sri Ramakrishna's words completely transformed him, gave him a new life. So listening to great life-giving ideas is the simplest and easiest path for one to realize God, to reach the highest supreme goal. That's why in the Bhagavata Purana there are many instances given which graphically describe the psychological transformation brought about in the hearer's mind. In the Bhagavata there is also a description of the highest devotees. In the 11th skandha, there is a dialogue between a king Like Parikshit, now his name is Nimi. A king called Nimi and 9 great sages, which is known as Nimi Navayogi Samvadaha, in the 11th Skanta, 11th book of Bhagavata Purana, I find. A great king once was visited by 9 great sages. Kavir Kharir Andariksha Prabhutha Pipalayana Avihotrodha Chamasa Chamaskara Bhajana. These are the 9 great sages who visited this king. The king asked many questions, but one question that he asked was about the nature of devotion. Now, Antariksha, one of the great sages, saints, explained the temperament of the highest devotee. A devotee who sees God's presence in all living beings and who experiences the presence of all living beings in God. Sarva bhudeshu ye pasyet bhagavad bhavam atmanaha bhudani bhagavadi atmani esa bhagavad uttamaha. This is the characteristic of the highest devotee. But in the second verse, there is a warning given to those who are in the process of evolving in devotional life. You cannot all of a sudden start experiencing the presence of God in all living beings, and you cannot see it all living beings in God at the beginning. This is the highest stage of devotional evolution reached by a Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa or Shankaracharya or a Buddha or Vivekananda and all the greatest spiritual personalities in the world. This is not the stage for a common person to experience. So in the next verse, this sage gives a warning. Ishvare tad adhineshu baliseshu dishatsucha prema maitri kripa ubeksha yakarodhi samadhyamaha. In this verse, the sage says there are different types of people in the world. Now, you should have devotion to God and you should have an attitude of comradeship, friendliness towards devotees of God. And you must have compassion towards those who want to be devotees, but they are not being able to become devotees. What about those who take you away from your path of devotion? Upeksha means indifference. So the great sage says, you should have devotion to God, friendliness, comradeship towards God's devotees, compassion towards those who are ignorant of God, but complete indifference towards those who hate spiritual ideas, who hate God, and who take you away from your path of devotion. There are certain people, if you talk to them about God and spirituality, they would say, well, these are all superstitions, these are meaningless things. I believe in some kind of spirit all pervading something, but I don't believe in God, all these things. Now, if you are a beginner, a sadhaka, a seeker, who is slowly trying to practice spiritual devotion, and if you take such people into friendship, slowly you find, well, is it some, perhaps what this fellow is saying is true, God is just a superstition. So slowly you find your own devotion, your own conviction, your own faith slowly gets shaken. So you cannot be friendly with them, because if you may think, well, Buddha could convert an Angulimala, Sri Ramakrishna could convert a Girishchandra Ghosh, so I can also change him over to my side. But you find slowly he will change you to his side. The conversion may take place the other way around. So the great sage Antariksha says, upeksha means total indifference. You should not quarrel with them. You should not be angry with them, because anger and quarrel also can create some ripples in our mind which can disturb the mind of a beginner, of a spiritual seeker who has not fully established in spiritual experience. So at the same time, you cannot be friendly with them. So both are dangerous. So what we must do, we must keep a difference, a distance from them. This is the recommendation of the great sage Antariksha in the Bhagavad Purana. So, but at the same time, those who talk, there are many who will talk about God, who talk about ideas and things which will reinforce your own faith, which affirm your own spiritual, chosen spiritual path. Such conversation and hearing words from such fellow spiritual pilgrims is certainly a great help in spiritual path. So now, as it was suggested earlier, if there are a few points which you would want me to clarify or to describe in greater detail, if there is any point which you want me to discuss, you can suggest. Otherwise, I shall stop. Anything, any. Yes.
When you said Abhyasa Yoga, is that the same? When you say Abhyasa Yoga, do you mean Jnana Yoga? Or is there a core difference between Abhyasa and a Bhakti sense?
Yes.
And
Abhyasa Yoga, Abhyasa means repetition. Now, Abhyasa Yoga, according to devotional philosophers, what Lord Krishna calls Abhyasa Yoga in the 9th verse of 12th chapter of Gita is the same which Prahlada calls Navadha Bhakti in the Bhagavad Purana. Because these nine paths will somehow help you to reach the stage indicated in the 8th verse, where your mind and intellect completely dwell on the thought of God. That should be the goal. That is kind of sayujyam, it's sometimes called. That should be the ultimate goal. But it is something that we have to aim at. We have to reach at a later date. Those whose minds are facing distraction, they are distracted. They should somehow try to divert, channelize their senses, their mind and intellect with godly thoughts, spiritual thoughts. So, which means repetition. So all the five senses, senses of perception are given a spiritual orientation through the path of Navadha Bhakti. Chisravanam. You are hearing with your ears. Mind also will naturally imbibe spiritual ideas, and that may also lead to practice, and also kirtanam. All these are, you know, all the 9 paths indicated in Navadha Bhakti will ultimately take you to the highest stage of devotional experience indicated in the 8th verse, where Lord Krishna said, Mayeva mana atharsva mai buddhim nivesiya, means where mind and intellect are completely surrendered to God. Nivasishyasi mayeva ata udhanna samsiya. If you succeed in surrendering your mind and intellect to God, then I shall live in you. And according to commentators, you also live in me. Both are indicated here. Nivasishyasi means tum mai nivasishyasi. You shall live in me. That is the verbal translation. But according to commentators, it also means I shall live in you and you shall live in me. That's idea. So these ninefold paths are together called, collectively they are called Abhyasa Yoga. That term is not used in the Bhagavad Purana, it is indicated in the Bhagavad Gita.
You need an element of Jnana Yoga to get beyond a certain point of bhakti.
Yes, the path of devotion is meant for those who believe in a personal God, in a God with form and attributes. But at the experience level, at the highest experience level, there is no distinction between the path of bhakti, devotion, and the path of jnana. See, those who, if you are interested, you can read English translation, you can read if you are interested. In the Gita, in the 13th verse, the 10th verse you find, Maicha ananya yogena bhakti ravyabhijarini vivikta desha sevittum anabhirjana samsadi. This is verse, 10th verse of 13th chapter, where Lord Krishna says, he's speaking about those who have got the highest unwavering devotion. Avyabhijarini bhakti means pure, unchanging devotion. Now, Shankaracharya, who is the greatest teacher of Advaita, in his commentary says, this pure devotion, the highest and the purest devotion, at the highest experience level, is the same as jnana. After giving a long description of this pure, unchanging devotion, na vibhijarana sila, vibhijarani, etc., then Shankaracharya says, sacha jnanam. This bhakti, this devotion, at the highest unwavering devotion, at the highest experience level, is the same as jnanam. The path of knowledge and the path of devotion at the experience level are the same, but at the lower level, when you are practicing it, when you have now reached the ultimate goal which you experience, then there is a difference. This idea.
Swamiji, one question I can write down is that in Atmani Vedana there are six factors, and we talked about positive ideas, then the other one was avoid negative thoughts, and a strong thought that God will protect me, spiritualization of the total life. What are the other two?
I will explain once more. First one is anugulyasya sankalpaha, means developing positive thoughts which are conducive towards devotion, spiritual life. Then pratikulyasya varjana, means avoiding, removing negative thought currents. Then rakshasiriri vishwasa, means a strong faith that God will protect me. Goptrutta varanam tatha, means God is the sole protector for me. Fifth and sixth, atma niksheva karpanya, means a kind of complete surrender of one's own total existence to God, completely resigning oneself to God. And the sixth one is a kind of aversion towards things which stand in the way of devotional life. These are the six components which according to Vaishnava tradition are necessary for total surrender, which is technically called Sharanagati or Prapatti. It means total surrender.
So another question I have is on the opera book.
Yeah. Now Narada is speaking about Parabhakti. Sattu asmin parama prem ruva. The Sara is Parabhakti. But Narada, commentators sometimes give a warning. See, Aparabhakti is Vaidhi, means just, see, you do 1,000 names a particular day, japa, dhyana, fixed amount of time and all that. This is necessary, but should not stop with itself. It's only means for a higher goal.
So Navavida Bhakti is more for the regular practice. Should it be considered something for Parabhakti or Parabhakti?
Navavida Bhakti will take you to Parabhakti.
It will take us to Parabhakti.
Yes.
Thank you.
Parabhakti is indicated in the 8th verse. And in the 9th verse, Navadha Bhakti is indicated by the word Abhyasa Yoga, which will take you to the highest stage, explained the 8th verse. The Gita, I mean 12th chapter of Bhakti Yoga.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, there is a little difference, you know. Actually, the same. If you want, I can mention that. If you want me to mention that?
Yes.
Okay, then you can say. Now, according to, you know, philosophically, the Navodaya Bhakti as expounded in the Adhyatma Ramayana is not so profound as the Navodaya Bhakti of Bhagavata Purana. Sadam Sangati, that is sadhanam pratham, means sadhanam means sajjan sangha, means holy company. This is the first one. Second one is something like kirtanam, means mat kalapaha, mat kathalapaha. Mat katha means Lord Rama says, narrating my story, my life, etc. Mat kathalapaha. Second one is madguneranam, means just like, it's something like kirtanam, you know, praising, singing hymns in praise of Lord Rama. Fourth one is vyakhyatruptam mat vachasam, means interpreting, presenting, explaining my words. Then next one is acharyopasana, means worshipping, honoring great teachers. And then second one is Yamaniyamadi, that is sixth one. And the seventh one is Mantropasagattvam, Mama Mantropasagattvam Sangam Saptama Mucchade, means whatever mantras I have, any mantra related to me that we recited, chanted, meditated upon. And then the last one is Bahyartheshu Viragittvam, means Samadhamadhi also be practiced, and also an ideal of renunciation of external comforts, physical things, physical objects. That's why it is not so profound as the Navodaya Bhakti expounded in the Bhagavata Purana, in Prahlada's words. That's it. That's why I chose the Bhagavata version of it. And it doesn't correspond to Abhyasa Yoga as indicated in the Gita. So that's why I chose this Bhagavata version of Navodaya Bhakti.
So this Abhyasa Yoga is same as
Patanjali Yoga? Yes, Abhyasa Yoga indicated in the 12th chapter of Gita, that is Bhakti Yoga, is the same as Sravanam, Girtanam, Vishnu, etc., which I was referring to in the Bhagavata Purana. So it's 9:25, shall we stop? We will continue the class next day. So
yes.
Thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Tat Sat, Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.